Hello and welcome to Beyond Reproach. This is Tux Lurzel.
And Stephanie Domingo.
We come to you from Bushwick, Brooklyn, where we record on land belonging to the Lenape Nation, a nation that is one of many still very much out here doing its thing, and we would like to acknowledge that. We be drinking.
Yeah.
We be swearing. And this is the minisode where we just do whatever the hell we want.
We do whatever is on our mind. Mm-hmm. Deal with it, okay?
You can't stop us.
You can't. So this mini is a continuation of last week's episode where I talked about the sanitation strike of 1968. This event is considered by many to be the first collective action of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr.'s Poor People campaign, Poor People's campaign. And I just want to talk a little bit about that campaign, like how it started, what were some of their demands, what happened to the movement.
Yeah.
So there is a little bit of debate about where the idea came from. Some people say that, like, Robert F. Kennedy was the reason, like, the brainchild. Your face is... What? I wish you could hear Tux's face. It just went, huh?
Yeah.
I'm going to get into this at the end, but most historians trace Dr. King's move from civil rights to human rights to a trip that he took in June of 1966. He and his closest associate, Reverend Ralph Abernathy, they visited a Head Start program that was recently defunded in the poorest county in the poorest state in the country, a place called Marks, Mississippi. Mm. And they were just really moved by the awful things they saw in the classroom that day. They saw a room full of children that were clearly malnourished. Oh. And the teacher, using her own money, had just provided lunch for the class, and it was just a bag of apples and like a half a box of crackers. Yeah, so these are preschoolers just eating a fourth of an apple and four crackers for lunch. God. And he was really disturbed by this. And this was a man who had visited India and saw really extreme poverty there 9 years prior. And he's like, I've never seen something like this before. In my own country, he like openly wept. He was so like upset by the things that he saw. So after this trip, King started advocating for what he called a radical revolution of values. He was convinced that a shift to the left or the right was not going to save us. Mm. Like the era of reforms were over. We needed a revolution.
Yeah.
He spoke about racism, poverty, and militarism being these three interlocking systems of violence that prevented Americans from really even being aware of the extreme poverty that he witnessed in Marks, Mississippi. So over the next year, King, he dealt with a lot of setbacks, but he never like swayed from poverty after that trip. It was something that he kept bringing up in the media. And of course, you know, the media doing what they do did not want to hear.
Sure.
Talks about inequality and poverty in this country. We're the greatest nation in the world. Shut the fuck up. Instead of covering this largely nonviolent civil disobedience against the inequality everyone with eyes could see, they like to focus on the instances of violence.
Sure.
Or the infighting.
That's still happening today.
Both of which were usually later tied to the FBI's involvement in infiltrating these movements.
Plants. Yeah.
Yeah. A lot of plants. They also like to talk about his protest tactics. It's not what he said. It's how he said it and where he said it. There's a time and place, don't you know?
But I thought he was a saint. I thought...
Oh, no. He was public enemy number one.
That's not what Instagram told me.
This was then.
Yeah.
We've rebranded him as like a Care Bear. Mm-hmm. So on March 4th, FBI Director J. Edgar Hoover, everyone's favorite piece of shit, he sent an internal memo stressing the urgency of the counterintelligence program, which was nicknamed COINTELPRO.
Good times.
So we recently got an email from one of our listeners, one of our Patreon supporters, David, asking if we could do a scandal about COINTELPRO. And it's something that I've talked about in passing. I think I talked about it during the Fred Hampton scandal. It's such a big topic, David.
A lot of these topics.
I feel like I'm slowly chipping away at it, but it's vast. So this memo was urging the FBI, their various teams, to make moves to topple what they called the Black Nationalist hate groups. MLK was part of a hate group, y'all. Didn't you know? So this memo, it expanded COINTELPRO from 22 offices to 44 offices around the country. And these offices were covert. They were usually disguised as journalists, and okay. they would write articles that would be printed in major publications.
To try and sway public opinion, basically? Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah, just talk about how, you know, he's so militant and, mm-hmm. you know, he's part of a hate group, apparently. Hoover ordered his agents to, quote, prevent the rise of a messiah who could unify and electrify the militant black nationalist movement. Mm-hmm. And they added in this memo that King could be a very real contender for this position should he abandon nonviolence.
Oh.
So it's like, is he a militant or is he nonviolent?
Yeah.
Which is it? It's lies. So like King, Hoover, he saw the potential power in just organizing a group of people for like a just cause, and he was not down for it. Mm-hmm. He's like, we can't do this. So later that year in December, Dr. King, he announced his plan to bring poor people from across the country together for this new march for justice in Washington. He wanted to, quote, dramatize the plight of Americans poor of all races and make it very clear that they are sick and tired of waiting for a better life.
Same.
Yeah. I'm like, this is why he had to die.
Yeah, yeah.
A few months later, 78 leaders traveled to Atlanta from 17 different states for a planning meeting of the Poor People's Campaign Steering Committee. So you had leaders that represented like black sharecroppers, Appalachian coal miners, there were Chicano farm workers, there were labor organizers, there were tenants' rights groups, there were welfare activists, all sorts of people, Puerto Ricans, Native Americans were there, various wow. nations came on board, Asian Americans, and people from just, you know, the white community yeah. who just wanted a more wow. equitable country. They came together in Atlanta. And John Lewis, of course, was there. Mm-hmm. Rest in power, John Lewis. I'm so glad that he passed before the book burnings.
Oh, my God.
To get your skull cracked just to see your country move back is... I'm glad he's gone.
Yeah.
It's so upsetting. Oh, I'm sorry.
I know. No, it's yeah. it's horrific.
It's so hard.
It's like every day is worse.
Yeah.
Every day is...
Harder. I mean, there is good things happening, but like there is such a force right now to roll shit back.
Yeah.
We are truly living in the Reconstruction mm-hmm. part two.
We're definitely backsliding. And,
yeah.
And the people that are making that happen are just getting more and more powerful by the day.
Yeah. So all these people are gathered together. King, he described this, the reason why he wanted it to be this coalition by saying this is the beginning of a new cooperation, understanding and determination by poor people of all colors and backgrounds to assert and win their right to a decent life and respect for their culture and dignity. Could you imagine?
It sounds a lot like, well, on a larger scale, I guess, but a lot like the Rainbow Coalition of
yeah.
Fred Hampton.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's the same.
Yeah.
And this happened slightly before.
Sure. I'm yeah. sure Fred slightly Hampton got before. The idea from mm-hmm. him. Yeah.
I think this was 1968, or, well, I guess the planning of it was 1967, and Fred Hampton, I think, was 1969.
Okay.
68 or 69. But yeah, it was top of mind. A lot of people were talking about inequality and poverty. Robert Kennedy was planning to run for president.
Okay.
After his brother died, he became kind of obsessed with a memo that he found on his last day of office where he wrote like poverty in all caps and like circled it.
That JFK had done that?
JFK, yeah, okay. In 1963. Like that was the last cabinet meeting. It was a note that I guess like seemed out of place.
Sure.
So Robert Kennedy, he kind of used that as like the major platform of his run. Anyways, moving on. I'm jumping ahead, as always. So King, he continued to travel the Mississippi Delta to just, like, talk to more people about his Poor People's Campaign. And he was just kind of exhilarated by the response of the people that he was talking to. Because he was talking to new crowds, like, populations that he previously hadn't had contact with.
Sure.
And like everyone is just like, yes, this is what we need. Like, yeah. Tell us when and where we will be in DC. Like, yeah. This is amazing. So he really believed in the power of people coming together collectively to change things. He thought that poor working people could be this really powerful social and political force. And he thought that they were capable of changing some of the myths about poverty, about how, you know, poor people are poor because they don't like to work or they don't work hard. Like, wrong.
Poor people are some of the hardest working people you'll ever meet.
Yeah. So much of the poverty in this country is structural. Yeah. Like, it's just, so he really thought that together these people, because they're people from all walks of life, all different races and creeds, like, it's one thing for Black people to say, like, hey, things are inequitable, like, help us out. But, like, for everyone to be saying that, he thought that this might be potentially, like, an opportunity to talk about the root causes of poverty, not just, like, all these stereotypes that just uphold the status quo.
I hope that we find somebody or somebody else steps up to
to
the plate.
I'm going to get into this at the end. Someone has.
Oh, okay. Yeah. It's just like income inequality is even worse today than it was in the 60s.
Exactly. And we're all feeling it. We all can see it with our eye holes.
Yeah, absolutely.
It is not a mystery to anyone.
It's at the point where nobody can afford to buy anything. Yeah. You can't afford to buy a home if you're a regular person, unless you're making seven figures. You know what I mean? Like, it's, things have gotten really bad, especially for younger generations. Mm-hmm. Like, nobody can afford shit.
And so much wealth is tied up in property, which is kind of fucked up. Like, it really shouldn't be that way.
Well, and a lot of big corporations are buying up homes.
Oh, yes.
To A, drive up the prices, and B, rent them out for profit rather than letting regular people buy them and live in them.
Yeah.
Which is why homes in so many places across the country are so much more expensive than they were 5 years ago. Mm-hmm. The rise of websites like Trulia and Zillow. And
a lot of entities are buying property with no plan to live in those properties.
Absolutely.
To buy them just to make money. Yeah. And that is such an American phenomenon.
Yeah.
But I think things are, at least people are talking about it, and maybe things will change. So meanwhile, while this is all happening, like, you know, MLK is gaining momentum. He's talking to all sorts of people. Everyone's like really exhilarated by his message. The FBI, you know, in their evil laboratory, they are twisting their mustaches and stroking their hairless cats. They're doing what they do best, just like illegal shit to maintain white supremacy. So their goal was to disrupt this campaign.
Imagine.
They were not fans. So they had a code name for the Poor People's Campaign. They called it POCAM.
Oh, shut up.
So Operation POCAM, it became the first major project of the FBI's, get this, GIP. It standed for Ghetto Informant Program.
Fuck off.
Yeah. So this program, GIP, it recruited thousands of Black people in poor neighborhoods to rat out their community and cause chaos. So through GIP, the FBI quickly established files on everyone who was recruiting for the Poor People's Campaign in the biggest cities. They did a bunch of illegal wiretaps. They posed as journalists. They even turned some of these recruiters into informants.
A tale as old as time.
They jam people up, you know, they pull them over, they scare people. They're like, you have to do this because, you know, or you're going to go to jail type of thing. Like, you know, just tell us what you hear. And also we'll pay you.
Yeah.
So
it's, again, it's,
this is COINTELPRO. Like, this is COINTELPRO 101.
It's the same thing that they did with Fred Hampton, too.
Oh, yes. Like
getting somebody to infiltrate the organization. And
They did it with they did it with all of the civil rights leaders, every single one of them, under the guise of like, oh, these people are spreading communism, because communism is just anything we don't like. Anything that pushes us towards equality is communism. It's trash. So the FBI wanted to disrupt this campaign, so they started spreading rumors that they were the campaign was bankrupt, and that if people went to DC, there was going to be violence that they would cause. They also told people, this is so fucked up. They told, because again, they are preying on poor neighborhoods. So they told people that if they went to DC to be a part of the Poor People's Campaign, when they came back, they would no longer be eligible for state assistance.
What?
Yeah.
That's
a lie illegal. And illegal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not even just illegal. It's a lie.
It's a lie. That yeah. wouldn't have they been were the just case. Trying to scare people.
That's so fucked up.
Yeah.
Oh my
that
God.
That they would lose their welfare benefits if they went like and participated.
You couldn't do that, but.
No. But on. They don't know.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, they're just,
exactly.
they're preying on people.
No, and especially
who are
if you
already...
have kids and stuff, of course you're not going to want to jeopardize.
Yeah. So they also, like, not to be outdone, this is like. This is so fucked up. So the FBI, do you know about the John Birch Society?
Yes.
The FBI yes. collaborated with
of
the John Birch Society to oh set up an God. Organization called TACT, the Truth About Civil Turmoil. The government gave them money to set up this organization to basically run a disinformation campaign about the Poor People's Campaign, saying like, you know, the truth about these uprisings that we keep, like, trash. I don't really want to talk about it, but what I saw was that it was very right-wing, very, like, they were concerned back then of, like, leftist cabals.
Totally.
And there were lots
meanwhile, it's a rightist cabal.
Oh! Like, yeah. 1,000%. It was giving me proto-QAnon.
Totally. Oh, the stuff that they do at those meetings, it's like...
Oh, what do they do?
It's like, it feels very, like, Burning Man, but for like conservatives, like they're going out into the woods and
getting
going,
naked,
yeah, going buck wild, dancing around a fire and shit. But like,
really,
and then like,
and they're right
fuck poor people.
Oh, that's so whoa, yeah. Wow, that's so surprising that you would think that someone who was in the woods, like hopefully hopped off on like mushrooms, would be having good thoughts.
Mm-mm. They're like, how can we be more dastardly?
Oh my God. Wow. Wow. I did not know that. Now I'm like, now I really want to look into them. So this was the era of like JFK's security apparatus, which like there was no such thing as a bad idea. Like the FBI was just investing in anything.
Yeah. What if we turn those clouds green and
yes.
it so greens frogs?
If you don't... if you don't know what we're talking about, where I did two episodes, episode 14 and 15, Operation Mongoose and Operation Northwoods, the CIA and the FBI and just the security apparatus in general, they were doing wild shit mm-hmm. in the name of anti-communism. Yeah, check out those episodes if you don't know what we're talking about. But I feel like now is time for a little break, see?
Yes, ma'am. Break time.
Break time.
Here we come, whiskey.
Well, hello there. Do you wish your high school history course had more drinking, more swearing, and more ladies?
Well, do we have the show for you. Her Story on the Rocks is a long-form podcast talking about good women, bad women, fictional women, and non-fictional women from all times and places. Basically, each week we pair two women who we research with a themed signature cocktail. You won't be sorry you listened to our latest episode.
Available everywhere you listen to podcasts.
Cheers. Cheers!
We're back with fresh viskies.
Cocktails. Mm-hmm. So back to this campaign. What did they want specifically? So the biggest thing that they wanted was to petition the government to pass an economic Bill of Rights. Mm. The Bill of Rights would be written by Bayard Rustin.
Oh.
Yeah.
I love him.
I know.
Nobody knows about
no
him.
No one knows about him. And I want to do a scandal about him, so I don't want to say too much. He wrote a lot of MLK's... political stances, mm-hmm. especially with respect to like the economy. He was just a brilliant thinker.
Yes.
And a public intellectual, and people don't know about him because he was gay.
He was a gay man, and he was sort of written out of the civil rights movement because,
because of that.
Yeah.
Which is trash.
But then he went on to also help move the gay rights movement forward mm-hmm. because he knew the playbook. He wrote the playbook.
Yeah, no, and the playbook worked.
Yeah, but yeah, he was largely written out of the sort of the history of the civil rights movement because people were afraid to associate civil rights with homosexuality.
Yeah, and that's part of why the Equal Rights Amendment also failed because there were
so many lesbians
who were already in political power, like working for powerful like senators and representatives, who just wanted to be like, hey, we're here too. And yeah. we've been here doing our thing.
I know.
Unfortunately, movements, they try to hide the people who've already been there, like yeah. especially in this era. And that's what I love about like the BLM movement, that it is so like so black queer. And queer yeah. and like they're just unapologetic as they should be.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, we're pushing for equality, bitch. Deal with it.
Yeah. Well, the gay rights movement and the civil rights movement have so many similarities. And they certainly the gay rights movement borrowed so
yeah,
much.
Yeah, it built off of it. Yeah, yeah,
exactly. But, you know, I don't know that BLM would be able to be as queer as it is if both of those movements hadn't already happened.
It would not. They're standing on the shoulders yeah. of giants yeah. there.
Looking back, it sucks that this man has been written out of the history of the civil rights movement. There is a reason. The gay rights movement hadn't happened yet.
Yeah.
They couldn't.
They weren't ready.
Yeah. The country wasn't ready.
Yeah.
And they knew that if they wanted to advance their
agenda,
their cause, mm-hmm. it wasn't going to happen.
It would have derailed it.
Yeah.
And that's fucked up, but it's true.
Yeah.
So what did they want? They wanted, I'm just going to give a little overview. They wanted $30 billion for anti-poverty programs. They wanted guaranteed employment. They wanted guaranteed income for those who were not able to work
yeah.
for whatever reason. And they also wanted 500,000 low-cost like housing developments built
wow.
annually until they got rid of all of the slums in this country.
Wow.
Because they said, this is a country with a lot of money.
Absolutely.
Enough money to be waging war against brown Asian bodies in Vietnam, mm-hmm. and yet your pockets are empty when it comes to your own country. So the plan that they had was organized into three phases. The first phase was to construct a shanty town on the Mall in D.C., similar to what the Bonus Army did in the 1930s.
Okay.
This town would be called Resurrection City. Mm. And they had all the permits. They were going to be in between the monument and the memorial on the Mall.
Okay.
So phase two was to begin public demonstrations, which was the hallmark of the civil rights movement, was for citizens to be peaceful and to organize and to sit peacefully at like government buildings.
Yeah.
Utilizing their rights as citizens, just sitting in protests. And knowing that this protest that they do would bring the cops.
Yeah.
Even though they were not in defiance of any laws.
Yeah.
They were just exercising their rights as American citizens. They knew that pushing for the rights of the poor, they knew that the cops would come and swoop them up. And that was part of the process because it generated media.
Yeah, absolutely.
And newspapers were writing about it. There were, you know, there were video back then. So it was their strategy to get the word out about what they were advocating for. Mm-hmm. And the third and final phase was to launch a nationwide boycott of major industries and businesses.
Wow.
Because they knew that if this started to affect the dollar bill, that these business owners, these, you know, good citizens would then go to Congress and be like, hey, give them what they want.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
I'm losing money. So this is what they organized to do. And then unfortunately, on April 4th, Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. was assassinated.
Yeah.
And you would think that the movement would just die there. It did not.
Yeah.
They decided 3 weeks later on April 29th that they were going to go ahead with the plan that...
He was at the top of it, but that doesn't mean
yeah.
the movement died with him.
Yeah. So it began in Washington. Key leaders of the campaign, they gathered for some media events. They also did a little bit of lobbying. They talked to RFK, who was their biggest supporter at the time.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if he was going to come and actually give a speech, but he had been doing press around the Poor People's Campaign and just like supporting that movement. So these leaders, they were in D.C. and then they went back to their regional homes, wherever they were, because the plan was to organize these caravans.
Oh.
Yeah. They were mule-drawn, like covered wagons.
Wow.
They brought all of the protesters in these mule-drawn covered wagons as like a way to have like free publicity, because
sure.
they were on the highway with cars.
Yeah.
And they had like slogans scrawled on the wagons. One said, "Don't laugh, folks, but Jesus was a poor man."
Yeah.
Another said, "I've seen the promised land," because this was right after King was killed. So on May 12th, this was Mother's Day, 1968, thousands of women, led by the widow Coretta Scott King, formed the first wave of demonstrators. Like, once everyone got to D.C. in their caravan, she started out the demonstrations with, you know, thousands of women. And over a few weeks, thousands of demonstrations happened. A lot of people sat in at various federal agencies in D.C., you know, and they got arrested. And that created more media buzz. So on June 19th, more than 50,000 people gathered in D.C. for like the biggest march of their whole movement. They called this day Solidarity Day. It was the last nonviolent rally of the 1960s.
Okay.
So Bayard Rustin, he put forth a proposal for his economic bill of rights for Solidarity Day. And he called on the federal government to do six things. He wanted them to recommit to the Full Employment Act of 1946. He wanted to legislate the immediate creation of at least 1 million socially useful jobs in public service.
Okay.
He wanted them to adopt the pending Housing and Urban Development Act that was going through Congress and was not looking great. He wanted Congress to repeal punitive welfare restrictions that were currently on the books. And he wanted to extend to all farm workers the right guaranteed under the National Labor Relations Act to organize agricultural labor unions, because these farm workers were not able to organize for whatever reason. I mean, racism. Huh. And he also wanted budget cuts for bilingual education and Head Start and other educational programs to be reinstated. That was their demands.
And this is while LBJ was president, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, 68.
Wow.
So the legacy of this campaign, unfortunately, the unity and the organization and all of these like really good economic ideas that would have been good for these people and also just good for the country in general, they were no match to the FBI fuckery and the police state that we currently live in.
Yeah.
The day after Solidarity Day, and there were, I mean, I guess there was a little bit of violence, but it's like violence by design by the FBI. The police came the day after with tear gas.
Of course.
And over the next few weeks and months, more people would be arrested. The camp would be slowly destroyed. It was the bonus army all over again. Thankfully, though, no one died this time.
Okay, good.
No one died. Wow. With the bonus army, a baby died from tear gas inhalation.
Jesus.
So thankfully, no one brought their babies.
Wow.
So when they were tear gassed, everyone survived. However, good things did happen in the aftermath of this campaign.
Oh, good. Okay.
All of a sudden, there was all this free money for school lunches and for Head Start in Mississippi and Alabama. And also the USDA released a surplus of food to the nation's 1,000 poorest counties in the country.
Okay.
Food stamps were expanded and some welfare guidelines were streamlined. So it made it easier for people to get the state assistance that they needed until Reagan.
Yeah, LBJ, as much as he was a freaking weirdo, he did some good things.
Yeah, because this was assassination era.
Totally.
Where they were just killing all people who were pushing for equality. And I feel like LBJ felt bad, like he had to do something to like keep the country together.
I also think that a lot of it had to do with legacy. He like wanted people to love him the way they loved
Kennedy. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're right. That was huge for him because just his ego.
And meanwhile, we're talking about his dick.
By any means necessary, like, if you're doing this just to look good after you're dead, do it. Like, if that's what you need to do the right thing, by all means.
Yeah.
So in 2018, a contemporary Poor People's Campaign was launched to push again for the same moral reckoning that MLK wanted. when it comes to economic justice. Yeah. So on their website, they talk about a third reconstruction because we are currently in the second one.
Yeah.
And this is a quote: "In order to build a true third reconstruction, we must simultaneously deal with the interlocking injustices of systemic racism, poverty, ecological devastation, and the denial of healthcare, militarism, and the distorted moral narrative of religious nationalism that blames the poor instead of the systems that cause poverty."
Yes, absolutely.
Mic drop. They are currently one of the loudest voices pushing Congress for the full $3 trillion Build Back Better plan. They're pushing for full voting rights, obviously, protections, including the John Lewis Voting Right Restoration Act and for the People Act, not the ones amended by Manchin.
Sure.
That failed. So I'm going to put all this information in the show notes. They are planning a march on June 18th of this year.
I have never even heard of this.
Yeah. Where... I like really want to go.
Yeah. When I is really... it in D.C.?
In D.C. Yeah. So it's the day after Solidarity Day. So Joe Kennedy III, the grandson of Robert Kennedy, is their like special advisor.
Okay.
You know Joe Kennedy III, like red-haired, looks like yes. Kennedy. Mm-hmm. He's like pushing for economic justice. And I hope it doesn't get him killed. I know. Like it got his family killed.
The curse, yeah.
So, yeah, I mentioned earlier that JFK in his last cabinet meeting, he like wrote poverty real big and like circled it. And his brother was like haunted by that. He's just like, what does this even mean?
Yeah.
So in memory of his brother, RFK, he made poverty and economic justice like his special project. And he was touring the country for like 2 years leading up to his run for the presidency. And he was the biggest supporter of the Poor People's Campaign. Wow. And I feel like that's why he died.
Oh, absolutely.
Right?
Yeah. Everyone talks about the Kennedy curse. I'm like, the Kennedy curse is the FBI.
facts on facts. Yes,
that's why they were never able to find that second shooter.
Yeah. So yeah, the end. I shouldn't say half the things I say.
Yes, I know. Yeah, thank you for telling. I honestly had no idea. I've heard of similar concepts. Like I knew about the Rainbow
Coalition.
Yeah, you
had no idea because Martin Luther King Jr. was killed.
Yeah.
He was supposed to be here. Like,
yeah, I know.
Could you just even imagine all of the speeches that we would have from this?
Who would we be quoting on?
I know. You know. I know. Not him.
If he was still around to like stir the pot.
If he was talking about economic injustice for all people.
Burn him.
He would not be on Ford commercials.
Yeah. If he was still around, his legacy wouldn't be able to be like Disney-fied.
Yeah. But I feel inspired that the movement is still going.
No, absolutely. It's incredible.
Every year since 2018, it's just been getting bigger and bigger. And they're like pushing policy goals. Go to their website. I'm going to put all the information in the show notes. They have like... their website is extensive. They have all these fact sheets on like poverty and education. And
is there any like sort of one person, like a figurehead spearheading
there's
this whole thing?
There's two people. Okay. There are like two reverends and this MPO based in, I want to say, Wisconsin, that's like pushing for moral laws.
reverends doing the right thing and not pushing the prosperity gospel. I love it. Thank you for telling that.
Yeah, follow them on Twitter. They're like, they get really spicy with Joe Manchin on Twitter.
And he's
garbage. Living. I mean, it's not spicy. They're just coming at him with facts. And like, they're like, they stay up in his ass.
Some people could consider that spicy.
Yeah.
We have consumed a very large amount of whiskey today.
Yes, it's true. It shows.
Tim knows very well how much whiskey we have consumed. Thank you guys for listening to Beyond Reproach. Yes. This has been Tux Lurzel.
I'm Stephanie Domingo.
Thank you to Tim Clough, our editor, sound engineer, and podfather. We could not do this without him. Thank you for putting up with us in our drunken ways, Tim. Yes. That's it?
Yeah. Bye.
Bye. Beyond Reproach is proudly recorded in Bushwick, Brooklyn, on land belonging to the Lenape Nation. Please note that we are not historians. We're just a couple of drunks who never shut up and love history. A full list of all source information can be found in the show notes on our website. Please take a moment to rate, review, and subscribe. And remember that written reviews are especially important. If you like us, please do one of two things. Leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, or send this episode to a friend, family member, or someone who you think would be into it. Don't forget to follow us on social media and make sure you follow us on Instagram because we post our cocktail recipes the Thursday before each full episode. Please drink along with us if you are not driving. We also have a shop at beyondreproachpod.com. Get your merch, brand yourselves, and we have exclusive content on Patreon where you can directly support the production of our show.